We're excited to share this week the launch of our new Doctors of Running page at Running Warehouse. Ever want to tackle trails like David, crush hills like Matt, survive the cold like Nathan, or race like Andrea? Now's your chance. Head over to Running Warehouse to find all of our team's favorite apparel, nutrition, and more. Visit the link in our description to see the page today and make sure to check out Running Warehouse for all your running needs.
Everyone, welcome to the Doctors of Running podcast, where we, a group of doctors of physical therapy, talk about the art and the science of the things that we put on our feet. Today, myself and Dr. Andrea Myers are going to get together and do, I don't know what we're going to call this, but it's like, we had a really cool opportunity where we go, hey, we're both testing this shoe and we're having like literally the opposite experience. Let's go talk about this and talk about why and see if we can understand why the other person is having that. So, Andrea, thanks for joining me today. We're doing this in the middle of the week, unlike we typically do this on a Sunday night. How are you doing, first of all?
I'm good. Things are good. I got out for some nice runs over the weekend. Spring is definitely here in Connecticut, so it's nice and hot. Today was Boston Marathon Day.
For those listening, this the Boston Marathon was going on today, so should we ruin everything for them or just kind of let them figure it out? What do you think?
Well, I think by the time that this airs, people will know, so it's okay to ruin it.
So question for you, what shoe or prototype shoe were you most excited if you saw any on the feats of some of the elites?
I would love to know what Helen O'Berry was running in.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh man, on like your two new prototypes and you add like what looks like a full knit upper. That looks so cool. So that's some people get excited for like, oh, let's see how the racers do. And then some of us are like, what prototypes are people wearing? So, you know.
And the 4 foot stack height in her shoe looked a little bit higher than the Cloud Boom Echo 3.
It definitely did. We might be totally wrong, but I wonder if it's like a lower drop. Although the Echo doesn't feel like a 9mm drop, to be honest with you. So we will have to see.
It's got such an aggressive heel bevel.
Yeah. So that's another story. So we'll probably have another episode talking about Boston Marathon prototypes and all the fun stuff that's coming out. But today, what we are going to talk about is actually the Saucony Endorphin Pro 4. So we were very lucky that Saucony sent us pairs of these. We've been running and testing the Endorphin Pro series since it came out. I still remember I got my hands on those actually 4 years ago, not too long ago, at the Olympic Marathon trials where my wife was running. And I was like super excited. And I was running around while she was racing and dying on that like extremely hard course in Atlanta and try to get a review out as quick as possible. And it was like super cool. So it's very cool to see how things have changed because version 1 and 2 were somewhat similar. There were obviously upper changes and the sole did change, although they said it was similar. Version 3 was crazy different and version 4 has also taken a crazy turn. And as to introduce this again, Andrew and I, like, we had totally opposite experiences, I think, everywhere outside of Fit. And so we want this episode to be is kind of like a, what do we want to call it? Like a face-off or like shoe review? What do we want to call this? Because I feel like we should keep doing this.
Differing opinions.
Yeah, it's differing opinions.
Yeah.
Normally, it's Andrea and BJ, our sound engineer, who has the exact opposite experiences. But today is the two of us. So we'll have our differing opinions review on this shoe. So, Andrea, can you introduce a little bit more about the Saucony Endorphin Pro, at least like purpose and specs? Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah. So actually, the Saucony Endorphin Pro 1 was the first super shoe I ever ran in. I wasn't testing shoes for Doctors of Running back then.
Not yet.
But I was getting, not yet. But I was getting back into running and I just loved that shoe. I wasn't running marathons back then. So it was a great 5K, 10K shoe for me. I would definitely agree with you. The 1 and the 2 felt similar. The 3 was totally different. I really enjoyed it for longer races, like 10 mile to marathon. And then the 4 was just so different. I would say compared to the first 3, the 4 is most similar to the 1 for me.
Oh, that's
just
interesting.
Just in terms of its snap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a lot like the 1, but out of the 3 previous models, it's the most similar to the 1 for me. So let me introduce the specs quickly. So the men's shoe in a men's size 9 is 7.7 ounces, 218 grams. Women's size 8, 6.5 ounces, 184 grams. So pretty light, definitely not coming in under that 6 ounce mark for the women like we see the Vaporfly doing, but it's still a very light shoe.
Or 7 ounces for 7 ounces is kind of the men's equivalent for that.
Yeah. Stack height, 40 millimeters in the heel, 32 in the forefoot for an 8 millimeter drop. Like so many 8 millimeter drop super shoes, it doesn't feel like an 8 mil drop shoe.
No, it doesn't.
Perfectly comfortable for me. So basically, this episode came from Matt making a review video of this shoe.
And
I watched it and I immediately texted him and I said, I disagree with everything that you said in your video. And that's where the idea for this came from. And we'll talk about this in a little bit, but Matt and I have very different running styles. You know, nobody has the same running style as somebody else. So a lot of shoes we don't have the same experience in, but this is definitely an extreme example where basically everything that we wrote in our review outside of fit is the opposite of one another.
And that's why we have multiple people on most reviews, is that we know that different people respond differently to shoes. And so if you can find one of us that's similar to you in terms of mechanics and how you fit and things like that, that's what we're looking for. We're not looking to have one review going, oh, this is the end all be all. People are different and you can't get around that. So I'm sure you found that you may have us that one of us that you like as one of your reviewers. You may have a completely different, you know, reviewer in terms of like outside of Doctor Running. We totally get that because you need to find who works best. But this is the little behind the scenes of how we kind of figured this stuff out. So yeah. So other couple things that have changed about the Saucony Endorphin Pro that I'm really wondering if this made an impact. So there is now a top layer of PowerRun HG. So unlike the Endorphin Pro 3, I think we both liked it. I found it versatile across like any distance. I used it from 5K. I used it for half marathons. I haven't done marathons in a while just because I haven't had the emotional energy or time to do so, or don't want to die. No, it's bad, terrible. But I just found this crazy bouncy shoe that, and I don't mean to use this as a standard, one of the first shoes that really rivaled even better than so for me, the Nike Vaporfly in terms of responsiveness, the bounce of the sole. I was like, whoa, like Saucony, you can tell me this is PowerRun PB in here, but I don't believe you. And by the way, even if they call it that name, every company is changing its foams and evolving. The Endorphin Pro 4 now features a top layer of PowerRun HG, which is their newest type of foam, the major foam found in the Saucony Endorphin Elite. So there's a lot of changes. The geometry is different on this shoe. The fit is different on this shoe. How it rides, but how each person is going to respond is different. So Andrea, why don't you start with how did this shoe fit for you? Because that was different from version 3.
It was, yeah. I was actually wondering if I should have gotten a different size initially. So in every version of the Endorphin Pro from 1 to 3, I've gone up a half size for length. Using my regular size just made the toe box too short. I would immediately get black toenails, so half size up has worked really well for me. When we got the Endorphin Speed 4, it just felt so big on my foot compared to the other, you know, previous versions of the Speed. So it made me wonder, okay, when Saucony sends us the Pro, should I go up half size or not? And it turned out Saucony didn't have my, you know, true to size. So they sent me a half size up like usual. And when I put it on, it was definitely longer than the version 3. But as soon as I ran in it, I knew it was the right size. My foot didn't slide around. It didn't feel too big. It was comfortable. I'm sure I could run in my regular size, but it wouldn't be as accommodating and there would be the potential for black toenails. So I know a lot of people do go up a half size in the Endorphin line. If you're like right on the border, you might find that you're true to size in version 4. But if you're like me, I'm basically like on the border of two sizes with every brand of shoe. So I'm definitely happy sticking with a half size up.
Got it. I'm pretty lucky that I'm usually pretty solidly a 10 in most things. So like 10 for all the different versions, 10 across line. I can't think. There's like one or two companies that actually make shoes that are a little long that I've had to go a half size down in, but typically everything's been pretty consistent. So I found, that said, I found this shoe to be a tiny bit longer Not enough for me to want to change sizes, because I agree that if I went a half size down, it would definitely, I would definitely lose some toenails probably, but it just felt a teeny bit longer than I was what I was used to, because prior Speeds and Pros actually fit just a tiny bit close. Like the Endorphin Pro 4, or sorry, 3, just felt like it was a little bit too tight, but I didn't want to lose that because I was kind of like, oh, this feels like a racing shoe. Like it's closer fit. It opened up after I broke the upper end. This one, I didn't need that. This one where there was more room and just a teeny bit more length. So I definitely agree with you on that. How'd you feel about the volume of the shoe? Because the first thing I noticed compared to the version 3 was there's a lot more volume. Like I had to really cinch down the laces to get a secure fit that I wasn't slipping around in.
Same. I found the exact same. And you can see, you know, this is basically the shoe coming off my foot, and see how tight I've had to cinch the laces. This shoe has a ton more volume than any of the previous versions. And again, when you first put it on your foot, I thought, oh, this is going to be too big. The material is going to crease. It's going to cause some irritation. The material did crease when I tied it. The tongue did. Because there's so much material in the tongue, it's hard to see on the video.
It's also it's a one piece tongue. I think you can see this a little bit better on mine for those of you on YouTube, that it does crease over, but I didn't have any issues. Did you?
Me either. Yeah, it creased, but I didn't notice it at all. Yeah. The tongue is super long.
Yeah.
And I noticed that it seems like it's kind of designed to fold down.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
I didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
I left it up. It extended up the front of my ankle a little bit, but I noticed nothing about the upper of the shoe when I was running in it.
Yeah.
Despite all of the concerns that I had initially.
It does, for those who want a little more volume, like it immediately made me feel, reminded me of the SC Elite 4 from New Balance, where although this upper is not as stretchy, the Endorphin Pro 4 is, where like if you have a higher volume foot and you really struggled to get a good fit with some of the lower volume racing shoes, I think the Endorphin Pro might work really, really well for you. Even if you don't, you can really tie the laces down. And so I felt like the fit was pretty adjustable. Definitely not narrow, definitely not like, oh, I'm gonna like it's squishing my foot. You can get this thing to not only stretch but give enough room. If you have really narrow feet, that might crease a little bit too much, but I might be totally wrong.
Yeah, I agree. The upper seems very adaptable to different foot types, which is actually pretty impressive to do in a racing shoe. Definitely increases its value for runners.
Yeah, definitely. I do still appreciate there is a heel counter back here, and I have to comment on that. It hasn't bugged me at all. There's still some flexibility to it with just a little structure. I know that's one of my weird quirks. And no, I have not tried to run sockless in this thing because the inner liner is a little bit scratchy in that crease. I was a little nervous with, but I'm the only one on the team that does the sockless comment, huh?
Well, we've got to have somebody who does it. So.
How is it that you have like a triathlon background and you haven't done like sockless running, right? Like,
I don't have a triathlon background.
Wait, did I make this up? Oh, my bad. Yes. You just treat triathletes. Yeah, sorry.
I do all of the sports that triathletes do, but I do them separately.
That's fair. I'd give you a hard time about that. You haven't done them together. You've just done them individually.
Exactly.
So you just have it transition. Okay, fine. Okay. I'm going to get a bunch of nasty comments on the YouTube for that one.
Yes.
Okay. Just have to give you a hard time. So now that we had some similar experiences with the upper, talk us through what your experience was with the midsole, first of all.
So I should first say that I really enjoy the ride of the Endorphin Elite, which, as you mentioned earlier, the midsole is PowerRun HG. And the Endorphin Elite for me, and I think you would agree with this, is definitely a firmer foam.
Yes.
It feels denser. It's snappier. I mean, comparing the Endorphin Elite to the Endorphin Pro 3, those were two very, very different shoes, both in geometry and in midsole feel.
Ironically, so they had very similar weights, but they could not have been more different in terms of how they felt and fit.
Yeah, which is great because it's good to have more than one super shoe option for people in a brand. So I think that part of my experience with the ride of the shoe does have to do with that top layer of PowerRun HG in the Endorphin Pro 4. But, you know, I trust Saucony shoes so well because there's really no Saucony shoes that have really not worked well for me, that my first run in the shoe was a workout. And I do all my workouts from home. So, you know, my warm up and cool down are in the same shoe that I do my intervals in. And I went out my front door and I felt like a baby deer running. I was like, I don't think that I can do this run in these shoes. They just felt so odd running slow in them. I was like, no, just give it a chance, keep going. And they still felt odd running slow. And normally when my warm-up would be like in the 8 minute to 8:30 range, my warm-up was in the 7:30 range, just because it didn't feel right at all to run my normal slow warm-up pace in the shoe. So that was my first impression, like, wow, these are firm. These are very propulsive. Like, it's hard to control the shoe at this slower pace. But then I had a bunch of, I think my first workout was like 10K pace intervals, maybe like a bunch of 800s. And it just felt awesome. Like, it's so propulsive. It feels like all of the energy you put into the shoe is just put into forward motion. Definitely no sinking in feeling, which the Endorphin Pro 3 definitely has. The Vaporfly 2 definitely has. Vaporfly 3 has not much of a sinking in feeling, at least for me. But the shoe just went. Like, there was nothing but forward motion for me. And subsequent workouts, I'm training for shorter races this spring and summer. So I've been doing 5K pace work, mile pace work. And like, the faster I ran in the shoe, the better it felt. It just felt like it's tuned to go fast. And that firmness and that responsiveness just felt like it had an additive effect the faster I ran. I also used it on like a 10-mile, like slower tempo run where I was running like 45 seconds slower than marathon pace. And it was fine. But at the same time, I also had that kind of like, I can't really control this shoe feeling at this slow pace. And it definitely wouldn't be like my first choice for running this pace. It just felt, it felt too fast. Like, I had to run faster just to make the shoe feel right. And I know that that's pretty much the opposite of the running that you've done in the shoe. But I think it's important for our listeners to know that Matt and I have very different running styles. So I land at my lateral midfoot. If you look at my shoes, the outsole of the heel is 100% intact, even if I've got 200 miles on them, whereas Matt is the
mine's not
posterior lateral heel destroyer.
Gone. In 10 miles, so, often. Sometimes.
Of course, yeah. The way that we interact with a shoe is very different because we're loading the shoe in very different ways. So, Matt, how were your training runs in the Endorphin Pro 4?
I literally had the exact opposite experience where, other than the fact that I did notice it was firmer than I expected. And again, I want to clarify, and I always try to clarify this with some of these super shoes. This is not a firm shoe. Like, there's a ton of cushioning there. Like, if I'm comparing this to a pair of Vans, this is not a firm shoe. It's just firmer than I would have expected for so much foam underfoot. And it was definitely a firmer, let's maybe use some different terms. The compliance was less than I would have expected for so much foam. Whereas the compliance and resilience of the 3 was a lot. It really compressed and really bounced back for me. This one, there was not, it was definitely a responsive sole. It just, the compliance wasn't as high and I didn't get as much bounce out of it. And so I had the opposite experience where when I took it for an easy run, I was kind of like, or like, I did the same thing as you were. I don't go to a track to do this. Everything is done from home or done from the car. And I got to keep going because I'm either trying to get to work or what have you. So when I put it on, it kind of felt like this is like oddly firm. Like, I'm not getting as much bounce as I expected out of it. And I was like, this kind of feels better just kind of rolling along. And I did some kind of strides. I was warming up in my first workout and I went, okay, the strides when I'm going at like marathon, maybe half marathon, feel like tempo pace, feel really good. But when I try to push it past that, I'm struggling. So my first workout was a like 1.5, 2 mile tempo followed by some faster 400s. Cause like Andrew, what I'm trying to do is I'm not worried about longer distance stuff. I'm trying to get speed and think about longevity and really get some good 5K stuff. And probably the biggest thing, I should also clarify, a lot of this is done with Isabella. So this is pushing a stroller at the same time. So add another variable in there that we've talked about wondering. So would like to try to, like, it's no longer about me. It's trying to go, what's the fastest stroller races I can do? Like, crush people while running by in a stroller. No, I'm just kidding. It's just to see what I can do with my daughter. So for that's
well,
the first workout.
I think you should. Yeah. You should review the best stroller running shoes.
That's very true. I don't know how to quantify that, but we'll work on that. So again, the warm-up actually felt fine. Felt a little bit odd because warming up in any super shoe usually feels slightly odd. There's some better than other ones. But it didn't feel too terrible. Just like, wow, this is different. This is weird. When I started the workout, the tempo run felt the best. I was like, okay, I can just lock into a pace. I'm not going the fast as I possibly can, but this up-tempo tempo effort feels really comfortable. I can lock into this good rhythm. This is good. When I finished and I started trying to do the 400s, which I've been really good recently about being able to change into different gears, I really couldn't do it. I really couldn't push that. Like, even though I was doing 400s and running harder, I felt like I couldn't push down into any faster pace. So I was like, it felt like I couldn't access anything quicker in the shoe. And I don't know if it's because that transition was weird for me, but it just didn't feel as good when I was trying to really turn over very quickly. It felt best when I was doing a consistent effort and kind of like in that like half marathon, marathon pace. And the what made me again think about another comparable shoe for me personally was something like these New Balance Super Comp, their SC Elite version 4, which is definitely more of a long distance racer, not something I can turn over fast based on how the foam feels. It's just like, this is a comfortable shoe, although that shoe is far more versatile into easy run pace than the Endorphin Pro is. It was just something made me think of that. But yeah, I just couldn't get my legs to turn over faster or transition. It just felt like it was bouncy, and the best bounciness I got was at that mid-range pace. But as soon as I tried to go faster, I just couldn't do it. I don't know if I wasn't able to turn over fast enough or compress the shoe enough the right way. I just couldn't get there. And that's been different because I have been getting there with shoes like the Asics, like the Metaspeed Edge and even Sky. I can definitely access those paces. And a lot of other shoes like from Ultra, the Vanish Carbon 2, I can do that. I really struggled to do that there. Although later, I will say after the 5K I did in the Metaspeed Edge, I was able to get in a workout where I was finally able to access those faster paces in the Endorphin Pro. But it was the same thing where it's like you mentioned, like having a hard time controlling the shoe. I had really focused to keep at that 5K pace. As soon as I lost focus, I like it, the like odometer started, or not odometer, the speed started cut, like the pace started dropping or coming back up. Yeah, it was an interesting experience.
What do you think it is? Like, can you attribute that to a particular feature of like the geometry of the sole, like the heel to forefoot transition, how the foam feels for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the foam is just a teeny bit firmer, and it feels like it takes, it's either I'm not compressing it fast enough or it compresses a little bit slower than I'm demanding of it. I don't know which one it is. The other thing I'm also wondering is because it fits slightly long, I'm wondering if I'm not hitting the forefoot rocker at the right place. Because I know Saucony does, what do they call this? They have a special name. Like the
speed roll.
The speed roll technology. Most of their shoes I've done pretty well in. Like you, I did very well running 5Ks in the original Endorphin Pro. Like it worked well. It was a little bit firmer. It wasn't the softest super shoe that's come out. I could definitely understand how people would do stuff longer. But that length of speed roll worked really, really well for me. This one, I'm wondering because it feels like it fits me just a tiny bit long, if I'm just not hitting that quite in the right spot in the two different foams. I don't know. My nervous system and my proprioception is pretty sensitive to changes. I'm also wondering if the two different, completely different foams, if I'm having a hard time like feeling which one's compressing at one rate at certain paces, but that's a total, I'm not even sure if I'm communicating that right, but heel transition's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. With any shoe, and we've talked about this, the body has to figure out how to best run in that shoe. And I mean, the term for that would be muscle tuning, but it's not just muscle tuning. It's really your
learning, right?
Nervous like, system learning how to not only time your muscular contractions, but also timing particular range of motion of knee, hip, ankle, foot. There's a lot that goes on, and this happens whether you're running or learning to play ping pong or whatever. Your body has to fine tune It's neural firing patterns to help you be most efficient at a particular movement pattern. And of course, shoes do influence how we move through foams and rockers and levels of compliance and resilience. So if a shoe is, and I don't know if this is true at all, but just logically, if a shoe is significantly different than other shoes you've been running in, then perhaps it takes longer for your nervous system to figure out the best way to use it.
That's very true. And we are a unique group because we run through so many different pairs of shoes because of what we do in terms of testing and reviewing. We have to kind of, our bodies have to be really good at adjusting really, really quick. There are some benefits to that. There are some consequences that we've experienced at different times. But it's always interesting when you're transitioning from something that feels like so different than what you're used to. So there's definitely a little learning amount. But I will still say, even though I may have learned it a little bit, how this transition wasn't working for me when I tried to go to faster paces, where you had the opposite, where really didn't work well when you were running easier kind of tempo-ish, like up-tempo, like marathon-ish effort. It was like, this is either going to go faster? Not at all, it sounds like.
Yeah. And I think the point you made about maybe the rocker not hitting your MTPs correctly, I think that's probably also a factor. I don't know about your feet, but looking at my foot, toe length compared to foot length, I basically have short toes. And often if a shoe has a very early forefoot rocker, like the ASICS Magic Speed, that shoe, it just feels like I don't have an opportunity to even load my foot before that forefoot rocker pushes me into push off. And I recently, testing the Ultra Vanish Carbon 2, that forefoot rocker starts early and there's a flex groove that lines up like an inch behind my first MTP. And when I run slowly in that shoe, I get a lot of pain in my medial longitudinal arch because basically the shoe's trying to flex where my foot doesn't flex. And the only way to know if a shoe's rocker lines up with your foot is to go try it on and actually run in it. But that's something that people should consider when they try on shoes and think about which one to buy.
So it's interesting you bring that up because I have the opposite, where I have fairly long toes and my MTP joint is kind of a little bit farther back relative, because I've got, this is going to sound weird, having been a PT, gotten to see a lot of people's feet and toes, go, oh, that's interesting, kind of looking at how that varies. So all my digits, like fingers and toes, are on the longer side. I don't know if that helped me be a musician beforehand. I played violin and piano. Don't know if that was helpful, but I tend to work really well when the rocker is a little bit longer. So if I can get that to start earlier, I do better. Some of the shoes with like that really late rocker, I really struggle with. Like the shoe that comes to mind immediately was the original Adidas Adios Pro, where it had that really late forefoot rocker. And that shoe and I just did not get along, which was very disappointing because that was one of the shoes that the whole team will make fun of me that I went and bought on eBay for like way too much money and terrible, but that's a different story. So,
and yet, have you learned your lesson about buying shoes on eBay?
I feel like for the most part, yes, but still not quite. So that's another whole episode.
Yeah. And you're still evolving.
I'm still evolving. It's getting better. But yeah, so I wonder if like, again, our ability to trend, there's a lot of different components. So like toe length, MTP joint position relative to the start of not just where the rocker is, but something we have a hard time seeing, although you could guess, although we don't know how accurate this is, the curve of the plate, because the stiffness is coming into really big play. Whereas I do notice this is stiff. I don't get as much of that, like, oh my gosh, this is really stiff, snappy shoe. I'm like, yeah, it's a little stiff. It's kind of what I'm expecting. Is that, what do you think? Did you have that same experience in terms of the stiffness? And then what do you think were some other components that contributed to you having your experience in there in terms of the sole?
I think that, well, I absolutely agree. The shoe just overall felt stiff to me. There was no sensation of bending or compression anywhere. It was like land and go. So of course, that's going to lend itself to being better at faster paces, because if you're running slower, you do typically need a little bit more compliance, cushioning in the shoe, just a feeling of give. And for me, the Endorphin Pro 4 has almost no feeling of give. You definitely feel the high stack height. It's very protective, but there's no softness in it. And that wasn't a bad thing. I loved running fast in this shoe. Like I said, I think it's a great 5K, 10K racer. And I really wanted to make the Saucony Sinister work for me, but that shoe fit so snug, I couldn't even walk in it. So I think the combination of the firmness, the early rocker, but an early rocker that actually lines up with my MTPs because of the length of the shoe, the firmer HG foam. And actually, one thing that I think made this shoe particularly comfortable for me is you can see that the midfoot widens laterally.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where I land. Like, I basically land here. So this shoe is super comfortable for my landing pattern. I have the Pro 3 here. And this shoe was great for me. I raced a marathon in it. I raced a 10-mile race in it. I think I have like 200 miles on this shoe. But I don't know if you can see in the video, but you can see I actually ripped the Saucony overlay because even though I really liked this shoe, I felt like there wasn't enough give where I landed. And I think just repetitively over time, I broke that overlay. I broke it on both the right and the left shoe. So I think the Pro 4 is an improvement because they widened it a little bit more at the lateral midfoot. And it works really well with my landing pattern. So I land and then the rocker, the firm foam just shoots me into push off. And the faster I ran, the better it felt.
I'm not surprised though that we both had that sensation of firmness because to be honest, and I think this is fairly well known, hopefully at this point, that the material underneath your foot is one of the biggest like impacts of how you perceive comfort in a shoe. Like that top layer can, even if you have something completely different underneath, can really influence, oh, this is how this shoe feels. It's just interesting that you perceive that as like, oh, this feels faster, snappier. I know there's some other things that I perceive it as, hey, I can't get as much of that like compression, like resilience, like compression bounce out of the shoe, even though I knew it was compressing a lot underneath my foot. So again, example of same thing, two different responses, even though technically like you've got a similar setup of the sole. So
yeah, I think that's a really good point about just the feel of the foam under your foot. And I've got a really great cycling anecdote about that. I use a particular brand of cycling shoes, Bontrager. They fit me well. So I have a road version and a mountain version. I had the road version first, got the mountain version, took the mountain version out for a ride. And I was like, what is up with these shoes? They feel bouncy. And cycling shoes aren't supposed to feel bouncy. They're supposed to be stiff, and they basically are meant to transfer power to the pedals. So I got back from my ride, and I'm checking out both shoes. I mean, the only difference is one is designed for two-hole cleats. The other is designed for three, and the outsole's a little different. So I was like, what could it be? So I pulled the sock liner out, and I put the mountain one in the road one, and I got on my trainer, had the same bouncy feeling. And it was basically the sock liner and the mountain one that felt bouncier to me was about 2 millimeters thicker and a little bit, just you could feel that it had a little bit more resilience to it. So literally just that sock liner changed the whole feel of a shoe for me.
That's kind of why we warn people, like, we're not telling you not to do this, but if you switch out the stock insoles of some of these legitimate running shoes, like if it's like, you know, you're like $40, $50 shoe, you know, at your outlet store, I'm not judging you. But like when you get these like high powered $200+ shoes that have the insoles are designed to be to work with the shoe. It's not like this throwaway thing. That's why half of them are not removable. But if you go and take that out, you're going to be changing the entire way that shoe is designed. So when you ask, oh, can I put an insole in this shoe? I'd be like, I'm really hesitating to tell you that because let's use a correct term. Because most people are going to ask to put an orthotic in there. They're not looking to replace the insole. They're looking to put an orthotic. You're asking another stiffening agent with a stiff carbon plate that is going to totally change the shoe. We have no idea how that's going to affect the shoe. And some people will go through the effort to yank out a gluted midsole or insole to do this. Like, you got to be careful because I'm not telling you not to, but you have no idea how that's going to impact the ride, the mechanics of the shoes. So just be a little cautious with this because that's not how these shoes were designed. I can't think of I don't, is there any shoe that you could think of? Like, because the only super shoe that I really know that has a, like, an easily removable insole is the SC Elite 4, and New Balance is usually pretty good about being able to take orthotics, but I don't know about, like, their carbon shoe. Are there any of the other super shoes that have a removable insole that you can think of?
The Nikes don't.
Yeah. The Endorphin Elite Pros does don't. Not.
No. Well, the Ultra Vanish Carbon 2 does.
Yes.
Because I was looking at that this morning. I don't know about the Adidas ones. Do the ASICS Metaspeed Sky and Edge?
I don't think so. The Adidas, I can't tell if mine are just old and they can come out, but I'm able to pull them out. For the Adidas, no, the ASICS, those are well glued in there.
And then what about Cloud Boom Echo 3?
Those are very removable. That's interesting.
I thought they were.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. They're glued up a little higher, but they are, you could pull that out very easily. That's not hard.
And the Mizuno Wave Rebellion Pro, I don't think is the one or the two.
No, yeah, that's glued in there really, really well. And then the Salomon S-Lab Fantet. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I could pull it out, but it's glued in. So very, very well.
The New Balance SC Elite 3, even though it's glued in,
is easily removable.
Mm-hmm. I think we've done a good job of covering how our opinions greatly differ on performance, but you and I actually disagreed on stability of the Endorphin Pro 4.
Yes, we did. Yes. So why don't you go first on this?
So because I found it to have such an aggressive and propulsive ride, I really said that this is a very much neutral shoe. I really didn't feel any guidance elements in the shoe besides just how aggressive the forefoot rocker is in combination with the firm midsole, the firm overall platform. Because it feels like as soon as I land, it just shoots me forward into push off, I didn't really experience any like medial lateral stabilizing elements. But of course, because of where I land, I'm less likely to experience some of those stabilizing elements as compared to someone who lands further back. So what did you feel in the shoe?
So I actually felt like this was much more stable than prior versions and probably one of the more stable super shoes out there. Again, not a stability shoe, definitely not even, I don't even know, you know, stable neutral is kind of, I want to be careful with how I use that term. But I noticed immediately the sidewalls were fairly significant, especially in the midfoot. There's also a 4-foot sidewall that I noticed immediately, and that actually worked very well with me. It didn't help me run faster, but it made me feel very comfortable taking this for a long run. The midsole, if you look at the outsole, if you look at where the midfoot is, that the inner part of the midfoot is filled in, which Saucony has actually done super well. And that's something that can really make or break a shoe for me. If this thing is really cut out and it's not stabilized well, that will wreck a ride for me. But this being filled in does a great job. So I wouldn't say it feels like things are necessarily pushing into my arch, but I definitely notice I'm like, wow, this is pretty like relatively stable for me. Again, the big test is when I take these for a long run, how does that feel? And it felt great. I didn't feel trash, like I was like struggling to find stability. So I actually had the opposite experience where, again, because I'm a pretty heavy heel striker, rolling through that felt very, very centered. Again, without being a true stability shoe, just the methods that were used were actually fairly good, especially in the midfoot and medial forefoot. Heel was fairly normal. There is some sole flare. I didn't feel like the heel was that big of a thing, but it was the midfoot especially and that medial forefoot that was very noticeable to me in a very positive way.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm normally really sensitive to sidewalls, especially in the forefoot, and I didn't notice them at all. And part of that could be just how the shoe fits. It fits long and there's plenty of volume. So maybe the shoe didn't compress my foot enough for me to be bothered by the sidewalls.
Did you find the Endorphin Elite to be stable?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wider platform.
Yeah. Wide platform. The like from like the heel all the way into the fore, like definitely heel into midfoot. The sidewalls are pretty solid.
Yes.
But the wide platform especially is what did it for me. The Endorphin Pro 4 felt different because the Endorphin Elite feels like heel to midfoot. This one feels like midfoot to forefoot that felt relatively stable. So kind of opposites in that realm.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've run in the Endorphin Elite, but I do recall being aware of the medial midfoot sidewall. not in a bad way, but it was just there.
Yeah, it's there.
But the wider base of that shoe makes it significantly more stable than most super shoes that I've run in.
So it sounds like we said, fit fairly similar, like a little higher volume, had a really cinched down laces. But when we got to the ride and stability of the shoe, that's where things really kind of switched. And that's what's so interesting. Again, wanting people to realize that people can have very different experiences in the same shoe. This is exactly why we have multiple testers, because each person is going to react. And again, I'm going to say this out loud. Normally, I'm on the sidelines where it's Andrea and BJ going back and forth. I had the opposite experience. Now it was my turn to actually get in on this and have the opposite experience. So this is one of our first different opinions podcast YouTubes. We're just going to test this out and see how it goes. But I hope that was helpful, because along this, what we want you to get from this is going, hey, here's kind of why we had this different experience, and hopefully some of the things you could pick out going, all right, is the plate and the rocker lining up with my first MTP joint? Get those big toe joints. Like, is that lining up? Is it ahead? Is it back? Do I like a longer rocker, a shorter rocker? Or do I like where you may not be able to see it? Like, do I like a stiffer plate? Do I like a non-stiffer plate? All these things are going to come into account, right? Do I like sidewalls? Like, I typically do really well with them. I know, Andrew, sometimes you're a little sensitive to them. They can kind of like irritate that. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, if they're too aggressive, they can irritate your midfoot. We have the opposite experience of those. So what we want you to get from this is that, like I said, different people are different. We want you to find the person that's most similar to you, either if it's on our team or somebody else. It really doesn't matter. We want you to find what's best for you, because that's our whole purpose. If we don't have reviewers that are similar to you, at least hopefully you can learn something that helps you make better decisions about what works better for your foot. Andrew, is there anything else I missed in terms of like factors that you might want to consider? We've talked about fit and foot volume and stuff like that before, but anything from like ride and stability that you would add in that might be worth paying attention to learn from this?
Yeah, I think you covered most of them, but of course, like your landing pattern, I think that's a big one. Runner weight does play a little bit of a role in how someone interacts with a shoe, but I don't think our weights are that dissimilar that we're loading the shoes significantly differently. But I liked your point. Like, it's important to find somebody who tends to like the same shoes as you, sounds like they have the same issues as you. And that's why we do this, to help you make better decisions. We realize that the vast majority of people don't get many, many shoes sent to their doors every week. So we want to help you be the most efficient at making shoe decisions. So when you buy one, it's more likely to help to work for you, as opposed to you buying one and then needing to return it. And what if you can't return it? So the more you understand your own characteristics and then be able to recognize those characteristics in a shoe reviewer that you trust, then that's just going to help you be a better shoe buyer in the future.
But that also takes into account, you have to be, how can I put this not in a negative way? You have to be responsible for yourself, and you may find that there is no reviewer that perfectly matches you. And that's part of this process, is there's never going to be a perfect shoe. I started this journey, this whole website, looking for a perfect shoe, and I still haven't found one. That doesn't exist. It's about learning, okay, who am I? What's my body like right now, which can change, and what's going to work best for me at this moment? And that's a continual journey that will evolve. So don't get frustrated if that changes. That's just part of the things you have to adapt. Like, I know a lot of people who love, like, I found this one shoe and I'll buy like eight versions of it, or like the eight pairs of it. And all of a sudden, like four of them in, you're like, why does this shoe not feel the same? It's like, because you changed and you have a dynamic changing body that will do all kinds of things as you age and you change throughout your life. So you have to realize that what you need and what matches you also might change. And that's okay. I know that that'd kind of be frustrating, but we're hoping along this path, we can provide some guidance and education to help you figure out what works for you as an individual. So hope that was helpful. I think we might do more of these if we could find shoes we really disagree on, to help teach people how do you find those individual things for yourself. Because not to go slightly off topic, if you look at the current evidence for fitting shoes, it's not really based on biomechanics, because we felt those biomechanical models had too many additional variables that weren't really matching the way we thought. And so the current thing is based off of comfort, right? The comfort, the preferred the comfort paradigm and preferred movement paradigm, both from Ben Onig, has kind of influenced a couple things like the run cat, which I'm going to make this joke again, even though you know it's going to be a joke, is where you take a cat and you put it on the treadmill and see which shoe it chooses. Sorry. That did a lot better at one of my lectures for University of Colorado. The setup was better. But the run cat is the running comfort assessment tool from some really awesome people in Australia they've distilled it down to 5 factors that for you as an individual, what shoe feels the best in terms of forefoot cushioning, which again, firmer or softer is not good. It's what feels best for you. Heel cushioning, same thing applies. Forefoot transition or flexibility. Stability, meaning rigid or too unstable, is not good. It's finding just right for you. And then overall upper fit was kind of one of the final things. And that's going to be very personal. And guess what? So is shoe fit. So we hope you recognize that again. We're very different. We recognize that. We have different reviews. Hopefully you can find somebody that matches best for you and learn more about yourself in the process. Andrew, any last thoughts on that?
One last thought. We're talking about shoes here, but understanding yourself and knowing what your body needs is an important thing as an athlete, not just in relation to shoes, but in a lot of things. And the better you understand what's normal for you and what's abnormal, the better you can communicate it to people who can help you, like physical therapists or doctors. So stand up for yourself, yeah. Know yourself. And if something doesn't feel right, go talk to somebody who will listen to you and take you seriously. And if they don't, go find somebody who will.
Go find somebody else. You deserve better. Okay. So that's our first differing opinions podcast YouTube episode. We'll see how this goes. If people like it, we'll do some more of this stuff, because right now we're just bringing out like basically our Facebook Messenger conversations and getting them out into the public. So if people really like this, we'll keep doing this, because again, if we can do something that's helpful for you, we definitely will. As always, you can find us on all the different social media sites, Instagram. Obviously, this is going to be on YouTube, might be on Spotify, podcast stuff, depending on how it does. You can find us on LinkedIn and various places. I got to give a shout out. Running Warehouse has been really nice to us and has actually put up a page for each one of us about some of our, not our favorite shoes, but our favorite gear. So if you're interested in some of the apparel that we like or some of the nutrition that we like, you can find this page. Bach is going to put this stuff in the comments below so you can take a look at this. I'm not exactly sure where to find it, but Bach has the link. So, you know, if you want to find like our favorite like gel and nutrition stuff, or if you want to be like me and put Scratch Labs coffee mix in your coffee and double up, you can do that too and be caffeinated for a week. It'll work really, really well. As always, really appreciate you listening and hope this stuff is helpful. Please always leave a review for us, even on the podcast, or leave a comment below and let us know what we think, because what you think is just as valuable, because we are learning just as much as you, and we appreciate any feedback, because then we get to learn along with you.